everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week and a huge division matchup to break down as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 84. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell as we take a close look at the Eagles' loss to the Cincinnati Bengals and go over our findings from both sides of the ball after watching the tape before we look ahead to next week's matchup against those Washington Redskins. Next up, we've got Scouting Report, where I want to talk about a player that missed the game the last time these two teams played, but he's become a big part of what they do on defense down in the nation's capital. We have got a ton to get into, as always, so let's not waste any time. Greg and I talk Eagles-Bengals before we dive into all of the biggest things you need to know as this team prepares to take on the Washington Redskins. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, welcome back to the NovaCare Complex. I hope you had a great 48 hours here since I last saw you. Let's get right into it because we got a lot to get into. Obviously, another tough loss for the Eagles this week. Their fourth straight loss, this time coming against the Washington Redskins in a really tight game, a fun game to watch. You and I watched together. I really enjoyed watching this game. I thought the Eagles had a really good effort on both sides of the ball. There were a lot of good things to take away from this game. But let's start on offense. Everybody always wants to talk about Carson Wentz, and that's where we'll start. Tell me if you think I'm out of my skull here, because I think a first grader can go to the stat sheet and can look and see, oh, yeah, he turned the ball over twice in the red zone. This guy, he couldn't have had a good game. And he fumbled it on the end. It's all on Wentz. I thought it was probably his best game overall as an NFL quarterback.
I did, too. I thought he played really well. And I think what's really encouraging is he played well after playing poorly the week before.
Yep.
And I think the one thing that stood out to me, too, was he was so much more, from a technique and fundamental standpoint, he was way more compact. Now, it's been a big topic of conversation these last 2 weeks, obviously, his delivery.
We talked a lot last week. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And he was certainly more compact. But one thing, as you know, I study pretty much every quarterback. I do that with college players coming out. And I think one of the things that you have to look at with Wentz is his arm speed is very fast. Does he drop the ball a little lower than you might like? Yes. But and I think that can be worked on because I don't think that's a fatal flaw. But he has very good arm speed through his throw. And I think that's something that I really wanted to mention last week when we talked about it, and I just didn't get to it. But overall, I thought in this game, Fran, he was decisive with his reads and his throws. He threw the ball with consistent accuracy. There was really only one ball he missed high. It was a short throw. I forget where it was. I'm sure you remember it.
Yep. I'm trying to remember who the intended target was.
It was high, and he probably put too much on. It was just a bad throw. But really, in this game, he did not really make bad throws.
No, I thought he made good decisions in the pocket.
Yep.
His escapability, his pocket movement, you saw some, even the subtle moves. And that's something where we know that he's got the ability to escape, the ability to create with his feet and create opportunities for him to throw late in the down. But what we saw, too, I can remember on the completion to Trey Burton on the three-level stretch when Burton ran the sail route, you saw that slight move to his right just to create a throwing lane for himself to deliver the football. Just little things like that where he's making subtle moves in the pocket to create time for himself, create space for himself to deliver the football to his receivers.
And I know that everybody who studies quarterbacks maybe comes in with certain ideas about what they think is important for the quarterback position in the NFL. I've been fortunate to study both NFL quarterbacks and college quarterbacks for a long time. And one of the things I really like about Wentz, and I'm not sure you can teach this, is he has natural patience in the pocket. He is not quick to move. He is willing to stand and deliver the football. And to me, ultimately, to be a high-level NFL quarterback, and that's what the Eagles are expecting with the number two pick in a draft, I think it starts in the pocket. And I think that he has natural pocket patience to stand and deliver. Now, there are times when he does move where he moves back and he's got to work on that. But we know he does have very good mobility. But I just like the, you know, the throws he makes from the pile. Even the three-level stretch when he had Ertz for 29 yards and he had the backside pressure, that
should have been a penalty.
That should have been a penalty. Yep. But I mean, you know, you feel that as a quarterback, and he still stood there and he made the throw.
He made some big-time throw on the two potentially go-ahead drives late in the fourth quarter, the one that ended in a field goal and then the other that ended in the sack fumble late in the game. He made some big-time throws on both of those drives, sometimes with defenders bearing down. He threw someone outbreaking routes from the opposite hash over underneath
which
defenders.
Which we showed on our draft show that he did at North Dakota State.
Yeah, those are things that we saw that were easily projectable.
And maybe his best throw of the game was an incompletion, the one that Matthews should have caught on the second possession, which was – it's funny because one of my guys on the matchup show was watching it today, and I was watching something else, and I hear him in the other room go, "Oh my God." And I looked up and he was watching that play, and I said, "What?" And he says, "Matthews has to catch that ball."
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those ones. Obviously. Yeah, exactly. And I know that Jordan would look at it and say, "I absolutely 100% have to get both of my feet down."
Right.
Something I've learned since high school. And he's made catches like that in the past. It's just a matter of executing that in the moment. But obviously that play goes on to bite the Eagles because two plays later, you get the interception to the pass intended for Zach Ertz. And let's talk about this play because my mentions on Twitter were on fire the last 2 days just talking about who's at fault. What happened on this play? Bad decision by Wentz, bad route by Ertz, awful effort all around. So I want to ask you about a couple different things because there's a lot of different layers to this play, obviously.
There's a lot of elements to the play.
Yeah, so let's from your perspective – Before we even get to Ertz and what he's thinking on the play, what is Wentz facing from snap to finish down in the red zone on this play?
Well, he's in the gun, and he's got Ertz to his left as the ex-ISO receiver, and he's got the back to the same side, and he's got three receivers to his right. So what happens here is when he sees it's zero blitz, and they showed it pretty quickly, it was pretty clear that it's zero blitz, which means everybody's coming and they're playing man-to-man across the board. He has to pick a side. You can't go from one side to the other versus zero blitz. You don't have time. So you pick a side. You're either going to throw the ball to the trip side or you're going to throw the ball to Ertz.
And typically against man coverage, especially against zero, you want to go to an isolation route.
Correct, because you don't want to throw the ball to a lot of bodies.
Exactly.
Right, so if you throw it to trips, there's a lot of bodies there. Yeah. And unless you're throwing it, let's say, to an outside guy on a fade where you know you're taking your shot on a fade ball. But normally you don't want to throw it right in the middle of trips. So,
sure.
So he made his decision to throw the ball to Ertz. Now, there's no question that DeShazer Everett, who was the safety who was playing Ertz man-to-man, he was definitely playing with inside leverage. But the route call was basically a quick slant. So if you're not going to make any adjustment before the snap of the ball, then the route has to remain a quick slant because you don't have time for an adjustment after the snap of the ball because it's zero blitz. The ball has to come out. So as long as that's the case, either one of two things has to happen at that point. Either Ertz has to run the route and he has to make sure that he crosses the face of Everett. Even if it's incomplete, he has to make sure he crosses the face of Everett. The second thing is he and Wentz have to be on the same page and you make a slight adjustment that you both know is happening before the ball is snapped.
Meaning so a slight adjustment in terms of
ball placement,
route adjustment,
or maybe
timing,
he doesn't quite run a quick slant, but just steps a little further outside because he's in. You know, whatever the adjustment is,
right.
Those are things that technically are done before you get in that situation.
Sure,
that's not you don't have time to, draw up in the dirt right at that moment.
Of course,
so one of those two things has to happen. Now, from what I've read, and you might know more about it than I do, is that Ertz thought that the ball would not be thrown where it was, whereas Wentz made the throw where it was, thinking that Ertz would be there.
Right. So Ertz thought that the ball was going to be put on his back shoulder. So he was running a quick slant, and he thought, and imagine he's running a quick slant towards the middle of the field, that the ball would be thrown on his right shoulder, his back shoulder.
Right.
Which is not particularly uncommon, but it would be an adjustment
based
on what you said would be an adjustment, whereas Wentz thought the ball would be on his front shoulder, which if that's the case – when Ertz, like you said, has to cross the face of that
has
DB
to.
Immediately.
The worst thing that happens then is an incompletion.
Right. So, but instead, Ertz expecting that the ball is going to be on his back shoulder, tries to sell a little bit of a route upfield.
And
or
then he sort of slowed down. Yep. And I said that to you when it happened.
Yep.
And they didn't. They never really had a great replay of it during the game, but I said it looked like he slowed down.
Yeah.
And I even said to you at that point that without knowing, you know, what was said after, I said, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, you can't let him cross your face. You just can't do that.
Yeah, so the ball ends up getting intercepted. It's a huge turnover, and those points end up coming back to haunt the Eagles in a big way. Let's get to the second red zone turnover. I hate to be harping on the negative because there was so much positive from Wentz in this passing game. But the final play for the offense in this game, Carson leads an outstanding drive downfield. A lot of big-time throws. Quick decisions. He beats their zone coverage and he marches the team down the field. Zach Ertz ran a great corner stop route to set up a first down inside the red zone. It was a great
little
route.
Seven stop.
Yeah, it was
little
a seven outstanding stop. Route. And then you get the ball inside the 15-yard line. It's second down now. And what you get is they're running a little, basically, you know, for all intents and purposes, a high-low read to the left side. And they're sliding the protection towards Ryan Kerrigan. But the protection breaks down. Matt Tobin, who was playing on it, we found out later, a damaged MCL, and now is going to be out for the year, gives up
the
sack to
Ryan Kerrigan.
Are you
playing right tackle this week?
I have yet to get my name called, my number called. But
it might be coming when they start practice.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So, I mean, again, that pressure, and we looked at that play at films, a bunch of us, that pressure was really quick. You couldn't throw it to Matthews out of the backfield.
Not yet.
That's not an available throw with no timeouts.
No.
And so basically what he was waiting for, because he was looking left, was he was waiting for the two routes. Ertz was one of them. I forget who the other receiver was.
I think it was Nelson running the bottom of the vertical route.
So you're waiting for that to develop, but the pressure was too quick. Like I said, we talked about it at NFL Films. No one thought that was on Carson Wentz. It was just too quick.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't throw it to Matthews. I mean, obviously, he's leaking out as a check down, but you can't throw a check down there because then the game ends.
Let me ask you a question, and this goes back to that first interception. One of the quote-unquote flaws that people are throwing around about Carson is his inability to not stare down receivers. Everybody says, oh, he's staring down his primary option. He's staring down his primary option, which – I personally don't see as are there cases where that does happen? Yes, I think there is a case or so where that does happen, but I don't see that as something, especially on that Ertz interception. See, everyone says, "Oh, well, he was staring down Ertz the whole time."
That's not even a relevant point on a play. See, if you're going to go quick game,
take us through.
If you're going to go quick game, and what by quick game that means it's a quick 3-step timing and the ball's out. You're not reading. So you're not looking to one side and then the other side. So if you throw the ball in quick game, you're looking at who you're throwing it to. That's the way it works.
You're not looking in left field and trying to throw it over the right field fence.
No, not with quick game.
No.
And the Eagles do a ton of quick game.
Right.
So there's a ton of throws where he's basically, if he's in the gun, it's almost a 1 or 2 step drop and throw. If he's not in the gun, it's 3-step and the ball's out. And by the way, the timing of that is 1.5 seconds. So those are not progression reading throws where you're looking off. In the quick game, you're not taught to look to one side and throw it to the other. Now, if you want to discuss deeper drops, pure 5-step, which the ball should be out in 2.1, or 7-step, which the Eagles don't do a ton of. Most teams in the NFL now don't do a lot of 7-step. That's 2.5 seconds. Then there's a reading progression where the quarterback has to work and manipulate the defense, but not in the quick game. So, for instance, on the interception by Everett in the end zone, there's no reading there. There's no look one way and come back the other way. You're throwing it to one guy. It's zero blitz.
Yeah, I meant to bring that up to you when we were talking about the interception and we started talking, and it slipped my mind, but I was glad we were able to hit on that point. So overall, I was very, very impressed by Carson. Very excited to see him play in these last three games and see him down the stretch here as the Eagles conclude
One
the
final
season.
Point on their offense, which I thought was really interesting. I'm sure you noticed it. Maybe you didn't chart it, but 57% of their snaps had either 12 or 13 personnel in the game.
That sounds about right.
And I know Doyle Green Beckham was inactive, but it's very telling that on their final drive, and I have the numbers, and I'm just going to look at them to make sure I'm correct. Their final drive ending with a Kerrigan sack fumble was 10 plays. nine of them. They had 12 personnel on the field with Ertz and Burton. And unfortunately, that kind of says it all about their wide receiver position at this point.
And obviously, you're running in tempo at that point well. But
no
yes,
question. But
absolutely.
I mean,
that seems to be their preferred personnel, probably their best personnel, certainly
with Green Beckham inactive. That they clearly felt that was their best personnel in that situation.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Let me ask you one last question on the offense before we move on. Isaac Seumalo got his second start.
I thought he looked good.
You could make an argument that he was their most consistent lineman.
I would agree. In fact, I kept looking for those plays where I felt like, oh, that's a bad snap. Maybe I missed a play or two because I feel like I have to watch so many things, you know, when I watch, as you know, and I'm very conscious of the other team, too, because I work at NFL Films, so I'm not just looking at the Eagles, I was looking at the Redskins as well. But I don't really recall a snap where I came away saying that was a bad snap.
Yeah, you see the aggressiveness in the run game.
He's athletic.
You saw the movement, absolutely, getting up to the second level. You saw the him looking for work and pass, bro.
Yep.
He looks good. He looked pretty good once again, which is good because if you're looking at this Eagles draft class as we move forward, you know, you look at Carson Wentz, who looks like he's going to be QB1 here for a decade plus. You look at what Jalen Mills has been and what he can be in the future. You look at Wendell Smallwood, certainly looks like he could be a piece in an NFL backfield. You have Isaac Seumalo, you have Big V. Some contributors here from the rookie class, which is exciting to see because Seumalo is a guy that I really liked at Oregon State, and now seeing him start two games in the last three has been really, really fun. Let's go to the defense. I mentioned that my Twitter mentions were on fire about that Ertz interception, but it was kind of making up for it because there weren't many people talking about Fletcher Cox being overrated in my Twitter mentions this week, thanks to the fact that he had two sacks.
Not
a huge change in the level, the quality of his play,
no.
But obviously he gets two sacks, which was really good to see. What did you think overall, Greg, watching the Eagles defense, and particularly the front seven will start in the run game against
Washington? Well, let me just say the first thing
team.
I noticed was their change in their nickel,
which
was
absolutely.
That came out of left field to me.
We saw that live.
Yeah, that came out of left field to me because Watkins, I think, played two snaps, and they Mills was the slot corner, and my sense is they want to see. Well, I guess I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you know, being in the building. I don't know if that was a function of feeling that Watkins did not play well or the belief that Mills down the road is a slot corner and they want to see him play slot corner over the final four games. Do you have a feel for that?
I don't, but it could also be, too. I wonder, with all the different things that Washington does out of their 3-by-1 with the ways that they use those receivers, did you not want to have Malcolm Jenkins potentially matched up one-on-one with a DeSean Jackson or a James Crowder
right
down the scene?
Right.
Did you want a corner like Mills
right.
in that situation?
And that could have been as simple as that to the matchup in this given game.
Right.
You're exactly right. I thought their defense, they had the problems that they've had in a sense all year. 181 of the 334 total yards came on five plays.
Yeah. That's a really impressive stat.
And – you know, I'll give you a perfect example where they're getting hurt and they're going to have to figure out a way how to do this. And I don't know the answer. I'm not a defensive coordinator. I'm not a defensive coach. I don't know the specific answer to this. But you know, remember the week before Brandon LaFell caught a 44-yard pass? It was quarters?
Against quarters coverage.
It was
yep.
the exact same yep. thing with the Jackson 80-yard
yep.
touchdown.
Yep.
And, you know, watching that play, I believe it was a 3-by-1 set, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. He was number two.
He was and I'm almost sure that the receiver to the backside, the single receiver, stayed into block. And I think when that happens, the backside quarter safety has to overlap. You know, I think
so. Real quickly, explain to that to the listeners who don't necessarily see what you're saying here. In a 3-by-1 set, if that backside receiver stays in the block, so if it's a tight end, that safety who
the safety on that side, the single receiver
who
side,
have his eyes, on
his
that
eyes has to go to the three receiver side, especially because number one now, you know, first of all, there's no. Well, I'm trying to remember it specifically. I could be wrong here, but I'm almost certain. See, here's the way it works. Think of it this way: if you're playing quarters coverage, which means you have four defenders across in the secondary, each responsible for a quarter of the field.
Right.
So let's say that there's two receivers to each side. Okay, obviously the corner is responsible for each outside receiver. The safeties are responsible then for each inside receiver. Okay, if there's no number two to one side, okay?
So it's a three receiver set to one
receiver
and the receivers
side.
Are displaced
then
a little bit.
Then the quarter's safety to that side of the single receiver, his eyes go to number three. Okay,
sure.
Now, if number three stays in, which is what happened on this play, number three did not release into a route, he then has to go to two and play over. So in other words, he has to leave his quarters on his side and go to the other side and overlap. And I think that that was McLeod. And again, I don't know how it's coached. I could be wrong, but I've been with defensive coaches and I've heard that. And I think that that's just something. Otherwise, you can't just keep getting beat in the same coverage, because corners and quarters are what we call outside leverage corners. They're in a tough spot. And especially if you run a route right at the safety on their side, it becomes man, and you're an outside leverage corner against man, and DeSean Jackson's going to run by pretty much everybody.
That's what when in those plays, and you talk about the Brandon LaFell play.
I hope that was clear
week.
Because
yeah,
I know
that's what I'm trying to. Yeah.
I obviously can see it in my mind because I see this all the time.
So we'll try and bring it back down a level below. You think back to the play last week against LaFell, the DeSean Jackson play this past week. You think back, even I can remember back a couple years ago when John Brown beat the Eagles late in the game down in Arizona.
I remember it.
A very similar concept.
Very similar concept.
So on a deep post where the corner.
A 75-yard touchdown.
Right, where the corner is playing with inside or outside leverage. He's funneling the receiver inside because, in theory, he's got safety help. Well, that safety is only there to help if he doesn't have anybody threatening him in his part of the field.
And so, the cutoff point is usually viewed as about 9 to 10 yards. So if that second receiver runs right at the safety, quarters becomes man.
Right.
And the safety has to take that number two receiver, and the corner has to play the outside receiver. But he's in a difficult spot because he's playing with outside leverage. But this is the NFL. The answer isn't, gee, they're in a tough spot. There has to be a response to it.
Of course. Absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see how they're able to respond to that, because they have gotten beaten on that in the last couple of weeks. And it's interesting you brought up, because about the amount of yardage that they gave up.
Five plays, 181 yards.
I mean, because overall, I mean, they held Robert Kelly, I think it was, to 3.4 yards a carry.
Yeah, the Redskins ran, 46 offensive plays.
He had 83 yards rushing. I mean,
when you run 46 offensive plays, your opponent, those are games you have to win.
Yeah, so it was a very up and down game, but it was more. I know Eagles fans want to hear this because they gave up two rushing touchdowns late in the game, and you know I was getting a lot of flack for that. Oh, you're showing only the good rushing plays on Twitter. Well, there were a lot of good run stops.
Right.
On defense. The defensive overall, I thought, played well. You eliminate a couple of those big plays against you, and it really kind of helps change the aspect of the game. Really, the big thing that they improved on was third down. I think Kirk Cousins was 0-for-4 throwing on third down, was sacked once, and that was a huge jump from the week before against Cincinnati.
The other thing that stood out to me was Steven Means, because he played.
That's
I thought
point.
He played well.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
Connor Barwin was the negative recipient, shall we say, of Steven
saw
Means
less snaps, sure.
Getting more snaps, because Barwin got fewer snaps.
Yeah.
But I thought Means flashed. I mean, you know, again, I don't know what he can be. Is he the kid from Buffalo?
From Buffalo. Played opposite Khalil Mack.
He was drafted, if I'm not mistaken.
I want to say he was a sixth or seventh round pick. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember watching him because I watched Mack, and he stood out in college, obviously, and I thought he had a chance in the league, and I guess he's been with three or four teams, but I think he's got a chance to be a rotational player.
I thought Means looked really good this summer, too, in the preseason. So that's another guy I keep an eye on the last 3 weeks of the year here. Let's look at this week's opponent, the Baltimore Ravens, so just as we wrap this up and we look at the challenges they can present to the Eagles and some of the players we've talked
defensively
about.
Defensively is where there's
a challenge. That's what's going to be very interesting, is that Carson Wentz has got a big test against Dean
Pease. So does the O-line.
And this Ravens. Absolutely.
It's a reworked O-line.
What do you see when you watch Baltimore on tape?
Well, first of all, they're very multiple with their front looks. And I know a lot of fans don't think about front looks. They think, oh, they're a four-man line, they're a three-man line. But they line people up all over across the line, and that changes blocking schemes, and that requires adjustments. Kelsey probably is the one who makes the calls, and it requires adjustments, because every front, depending on the play call, you have to block that front. So they're very multiple with their fronts, they're very multiple with their pressures, they're very multiple with their blitz schemes. They do a lot in the secondary, they disguise coverage, and they play a lot of different coverages. And they're really good on third and long. You know, they're a good defense. It's a tough challenge, not just for Carson Wentz. This is a tough challenge throughout, because this O-line, this reworked O-line, they're going to have to sort things out as they go in this game.
For a team that struggled to run the ball in the Eagles, This is a tough run defense, too. Brandon Williams and Timmy Jernigan has looked really good. Lawrence
Michael Pierce.
Yeah, that kid's coming out of nowhere.
I know. He plays good snaps. Matt Judon, to me, has played really well as an edge setter in their run game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Zach Orr and C.J. Mosley mentioned on the inside. It's a very good front seven. A lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts.
McClellan comes in their nickel, and he's kind of a movable chess piece. I mean, a lot of different players move around.
The area where, with all the different moving parts and all the different disguises, the different blitzes from all different areas and levels, you mentioned the offensive line. That's an area where you want to see Wentz develop a little bit.
Correct.
Is seeing things, especially when the defense shows one thing pre-snap and does something different post-snap. You've seen him get fooled, not in an awful sense, and then he gets fooled the same way a veteran quarterback get fooled by it. But it is an area where it'll be the biggest test for him this week.
Always a challenge. The term that I always use, and you know, the great quarterbacks can do a lot of this pre-snap just from experience. Carson Wentz is not at that point. No rookie quarterback is at that point. But it's how quickly you can eliminate and isolate. Because one of the things about quarterback play, to me, what separates guys is how quickly they know where not to throw the football.
Right.
Because this game is so fast that if you're a half a beat late as a quarterback, you're late.
Yeah.
And so it's just a process of how quickly you can eliminate what's not there and then isolate what is there.
A lot of familiar names for Eagles fans on the offensive coaching staff for the Baltimore Ravens. You have Marty Morningwig, Juan Castillo, among others. What can Eagles fans and what can the Eagles defense expect from this Baltimore offense? What challenges can they present to Jim Schwartz in this unit?
Well, the past couple of weeks have been a lot of passing. Now, I don't know if they'll try to go back and settle things down by running the football, and if that's the case, you'll see a lot of Terrence West. They've had some moments this year where they've run well. If they decide they really want to throw a lot, as they've done the last number of weeks, you'll see more Kenneth Dixon, the rookie from Louisiana Tech, who you and I both really like coming out, and he's a really good sort of complementary two-way back. He can run, and he's a really good receiver out of the backfield. So it depends on their approach. It's been a pass-first approach. It's a rhythm passing game. Everybody thinks of Flacco having a big arm, and he does, but this offense has been much more timing rhythm-based than more intermediate vertically based. So it's a challenge because the ball comes out usually.
It's interesting. I was looking at his vertical passing numbers. Ben Fennell did a great job of pulling this number for me. Flacco on throws of 20-plus yards downfield is only 11 of 47 this year, 23%. Which is not what you'd imagine.
Well, it's only 47 of them, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That,
so the sample size
that
is low.
To me,
You know, it's not an explosive offense from that respect, but like you mentioned, a lot of the timing rhythm, the offensive line, a lot of moving parts because of injuries and things like that, but big group that can do some things up front in terms of moving people in the pass game and the run.
And I think a matchup to look for, assuming the Eagles do what they did last week with Jalen Mills still playing in the slot, I think one matchup to look for is Malcolm Jenkins, then would match up on the tight end Dennis Pitta.
And we know Pitta is a huge favorite for Flacco. So, Greg, appreciate the time. Looking forward to watching this game with you Sunday. And we'll talk to you next week here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Thanks, Fran.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know, I greatly, greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That's one way to support the show. But the other is to go on iTunes or go on Stitcher, wherever you listen, and give us a rating and leave us a comment. That is the number one way to support the show. And I wanted to give a shout out to Dave King, who left a comment actually on our Libsyn page saying how much he loves the podcast and professed his love all the way up in Calgary, Canada. So thanks to Dave and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier, I wanted to profile a player that wasn't on the field the last time these two teams played in Week 6, but he will certainly be a factor on Sunday. Time to reveal who that is in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so the player that I wanted to focus on, we talked about a little bit with Greg, is rookie linebacker, safety, whatever you want to call him, Sua Cravens from USC. Just under 6'1", 226 pounds he was coming out of the draft this spring. Started all 40 games of his career for USC. 3-year career with the Trojans. came from a really athletic family. You know, he's cousins with Dolphins tight end Jordan Cameron, Chargers linebacker Monte Teo, and his sister was a starting basketball player for the Trojans women's basketball team as well. He was a third-team All-American as a junior in 2015, so you're talking about a three-year starter. He was a captain last year as a junior. It was his second season starting as the strong side outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme. He was a safety when he first arrived on campus. And when I watched him last year, you know, he was lined up in the slot. At times, he was out wide over tight ends and receivers. He lined up over the tight end, pressed. He played stacked, you know, between in the tackle box, lined up as a pass rusher off the edge. He lined up deep as a safety. So you're talking about a player that was used all over the field in USC's defense. And so he had that position versatility. Some people saw him as a true safety, some as more of a box player, and some viewed him, like myself, as a linebacker moving into the NFL. And that's really what he's become in this Washington team. When I watched him on tape, he showed really good movement skills, especially for a linebacker, the ability to play in space, very accustomed to playing on an island, and he runs pretty well in the open field for a linebacker. You know, he's got the ability to run around blocks and make plays, but he also had the toughness, the ability to jack up a tight end at the point of attack and disrupt plays as an edge setter in the run game in college. You know, he attacked blocks with good hand placement. He's able to change the line of scrimmage, showed a good feel as well in the passing game for route concepts, you know, as a zone defender and underneath coverage, can read routes and jump passes early, can play as a seam, curl, flat player in zone coverage, and he had the speed to run with tight ends down the field in man. So you're talking about a guy who had a good feel for playing in space. I liked his eyes in zone coverage, and he had the ball skills and the hands to reel in interceptions. You know, he had a decent motor. I thought that improved from his sophomore year to his junior campaign, and he played with a lot more urgency last season when I watched him on tape. Now, for the negatives, you know, he almost lined up, or almost never lined up stacked. You know, I mentioned that, you know, there were times where you saw that, but it was a little bit few and far between. So you'd have to learn how to read keys on inside run and sift through traffic inside. That's part of the transition from playing as a safety or as a slot player in college and then transitioning to a full-time linebacker. We've talked about that in the past with a guy like Miles Jack, you know, a guy who played out in the slot, Darren Lee, same deal. For coming out of this draft and went to the New York Jets. When you play out in space as a college player and you're transitioning to the linebacker spot, there's a lot more to that than just saying, okay, you're going to line up close to the line of scrimmage. You're seeing things from a completely different angle, and it can change the way that you kind of read your keys and see what's going on in front of you. And it can be a challenge at times. So he certainly has to work through that. He has the lean build of a safety, needs to get a little bit bigger and stronger, still very much the case watching him with Washington. He's not a guy that's going to stack and shed an offensive lineman once he's engaged. And as a tackler, he didn't always wrap up. He wasn't a guy that was going to make a ton of plays play side as a run defender. Most of his production in college came in pursuit from the backside or in space as a secondary player. When he did make plays play side, it was because he shot a gap or he came in unblocked. You know, like I said, wasn't a guy that was going to win with his hands at the point of attack, defeat a block, and flow to the football. I thought that at times he got a little too grabby, a little bit undisciplined in man coverage, had a lot of penalties thrown on him, especially earlier in his career. And then he didn't always seem to play with that motor, you know, that urgency that I'd like to see from a safety playing closer to the line of scrimmage. And at times you have seen that this year. I know a lot of plays that Ben Fennell and I have watched during the course of our film study throughout the season of the Washington Redskins where you see that toughness. So it's nice to see him improve in that area from college to the NFL. But really, he's an intriguing player. His athletic skill set, his abilities in coverage. I'm not sure, and this is what I wrote back in the spring, not sure he's ready to play right away full-time on defense. He could grow into a starter in time, but right now I think he's a sub-package linebacker and a special teamer to try and develop. They took him in the second round, so they were very excited about what his upside would be. And he really has been more of a passing down player. There are times where they play him on first and second down in the box, but really you're going to see him on third down and passing downs where they think you're going to throw the ball and he can be an impact player. Had a great interception to kind of seal the game early in the season against the New York Giants. He can be a factor against backs and tight ends in space. So Sua Craven, certainly a guy that Carson Wentz and this Eagles offense will have to be aware of when they face off on Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field. So great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening. Again, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you listen, because there's so many ways you can ingest this podcast, especially on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And again, if you get the time, number one way to support the show, leave us a comment, rate the show, let us know what you think. Don't be afraid to leave us a question. You heard the question I asked Greg earlier on the show. That came from one of you listeners out there. So I'd love the ability to get more in depth on topics at your request. So shoot us a comment wherever you listen to the show. All right. That being said, that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.